Hello, this is Don reading on Tuesday, February 13, and I'm going to be reading the Danville, Illinois Commercial News today. I see on the first page here that the lead article is that the city committee will act on annexation. Dateline Danville. Aldermen tonight will consider land annexation, expansion of the Danville-Vermillion County Enterprise Zone, and authorizing a property tax abatement for the new assisted living facility proposed on North Woman Avenue. The Villas of Hollybrook Assisted Living Community and Reflections Memory Care will be an upscale, private-pay, 50-unit assisted living with an integrated 24-unit memory care community, according to those with the project. The project is proposed at 2211 North Bowman Avenue, land owned by Mann Farms Incorporated of Oakwood and the Patricia A. Mann Trust. The land is contiguous to the city and within the boundaries of Danville School District 118. The city this year, with the annexation agreement, would pay an amount equal to the real estate tax collected in the tax year 2017 to the Bismarck Fire Protection District. In 2019, the city would pay an amount equal to 80% of the real estate tax collected on the property, then 60% the next year, 40% the following year, and 20% the fifth year. Last year's tax bill was $394.48. Under the enterprise zone expansion and property tax abatement for the 23.25 acres along Bowman Avenue for a commercial project with up to $10 million in investment, there would be a 50% abatement for 10 years. According to Vermillion Advantage President and CEO Vicky Hogan, the investment is expected to be around $9.5 million. The tax abatement would be 50% for each of those years for 10 years maximum. Here's a quote from Hogan, who said, "So rather than it being at the current farm value, it would be at that increased value, and the taxing body would get 50% of the new value, which is substantial." Also, according to Hogan, not everywhere can be in an enterprise zone. It has to meet certain guidelines as set by the state statute, and boundaries have to be contiguous. Hogan said this site qualifies based on both and is meant to incent areas that may otherwise be more difficult to develop, redevelop, and or incent projects that bring needed investment and jobs to the area. There's a 12-mile maximum that this enterprise zone can encompass as set by state statute. Hogan also says purchase of the site is contingent upon annexation zoning and the enterprise expansion. The rezoning petition goes to the full city council next week. Earlier this month at the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, Liberty Village of Danville's Lisa Miller voiced concerns about the tax incentives being given to a new assisted living facility. In other business tonight, the City Council's Public Works Committee will consider approving, one, a $359,378 contract with Midwest Asphalt, Inc. for the Cone Creek Interceptor sanitary sewer work. The city has determined the need to replace the sanitary sewer over Stony Creek near South Griffin Street. Funding comes from the city's sanitary sewer fund for infrastructure. Midwest Asphalt was the lowest of six bidders. Also, they will consider purchasing permanent easement from Steel Grip, Inc. and Straw Pack, Inc. for the Upper Cone Creek Flood Mitigation Project. The city has determined it's necessary to reduce flooding in this drainage area. The project includes constructing an overflow channel for Cone Creek across the rears of 1501 and 1601 East Voorhees Street. The overflow channel requires the permanent easement for construction and maintenance. Another action, an agreement for engineering services for bridge inspections with Farnsworth Group, Inc. The estimated cost is expected to be $600 per typical bridge, with additional charges for the fracture critical inspections of the Hungry Hollow Bridge and the underwater inspection of the Denmark Road Bridge over Lake Vermillion. The estimated cost for 218 and 219 routine inspections is $11,700. Funding comes from motor fuel tax funds. In other action, there will be considering in appropriating $556,500 in motor fuel tax funds for the city's 2018 general maintenance program. And there will be corrected paperwork for the Voorhees Bridge replacement agreement with the Illinois Department of Transportation. That concludes the rundown of action expected tonight at the council meeting. And also on the front page of the paper today, there's a picture of fire trucks attending a very major fire in Westville. Two fire trucks are shown in this color photo, with a firefighter directing water onto a building Monday afternoon on the east side of the 100 block of South State Street in Westville. Several county fire departments responded to the alarm, most of them bringing in tanker trucks with water to help fight the blaze. The residents in the area were occupied, but there appeared to be no serious injuries, officials said at the scene. Another color photo on the front page shows a fire department tanker that had flipped over and was lying on its top across Illinois Route 1 at Ross Lane. It was the truck and the van were involved in an accident at the intersection. This is another truck on its way to help fight a fire in Westville. The Kickapoo Fire Department was in the process of buying the truck from Catlin. Details were not available, but it's a rather striking photo of a tanker truck with its wheels up in the air like a dog on its back. And here's a report about digital police scanners making a, quote, definitive difference. Last week, all police communication in Vermilion County switched from analog to digital. According to Public Safety Director Larry Thomason, the biggest difference is less interference. He said, what it helps eliminate is a thing called SCIP, which is an interference between other agencies. For scanner listeners who aren't police officers or emergency workers, though, this also eliminates the public's ability to listen in on calls. Thomason said, my understanding is that with encryption, that's just the nature of the science itself. This internal mechanism provides greater safety for officers on the road. That's the biggest concern for me and the sheriff. Vermilion County Sheriff Pat Hartshorn agreed, saying the analog scanners have restricted reception. He said, about 5 years ago, the Federal Communications Commission started the process of splitting frequencies. When they did that, it severely restricted the area of coverage we could get. He said the FCC has plans in the near future to split frequencies again, which would make it more difficult for police to have clear communication if they were 20 miles away from base. The size of the area that Vermilion County police officers must cover can also make correspondence difficult if they travel too far and the signal becomes weak. Utilizing digital communication will avoid this. Satellite repeaters have also been put up to strengthen communication. Thomason said there are always updates that need to be made when it comes to safety and better communication among emergency workers. He said the county as a whole is ahead of the curve. Danville police have been using the digital system for about one full week, while other county departments started on Friday. Thomason said it's been going great. I've noticed in listening between cars and the communication centers, there is a definitive difference. That concludes that article. Here's a report in the Champaign News Gazette about the some action considered by the Danville School Board. That article is headed, Vote Set on Fall Break Calendar, Dateline Danville. Each year, Danville school students and staff, following a traditional calendar, look forward to spring break. Starting next year, they could have a fall break as well. School board members on Wednesday will vote on whether to approve calendars for the next 3 years. The calendars include the week-long break in mid-October for pre-K and all K-12 schools, except for Northeast Elementary Magnet School, which runs on a balanced calendar schedule that already includes a 3-week break in the fall. Currently, the breaks are set for October 15 to 19, in the 2018-19 school year, for October 14 to 18 in 2019-20, and for October 12 to 16 in 2020-21. John Hart, assistant superintendent for elementary education, said in referring to the week after Columbus Day, our attendance is usually low following that week. Hart said the idea for the time off was raised during a health and wellness fair for faculty and staff. Recently, he added, a survey taken by most employees showed that 321 favored the idea, 81 favored keeping the current calendar without a break, and 6 had no opinion. It's good for mental health, Hart said, also pointing out it's small enough that kids aren't going to lose any of the information they've learned. Hart said administrators were able to add days off without drastically changing the start and finish dates. For example, this year, most students' first full day was August 22. If the calendars are approved, their first full day would be August 16, about a week earlier. The last day of school would be May 29 if no emergency days are used, and June 5 if all 5 days are used. Hart said some parents have questioned whether the break would increase or decrease the number of days students would be in session. The answer, no. Kids will still be in school 180 days, he said. Hart said officials will resurvey staff next year and whether the time off was useful or caused any problems. He said if we find it doesn't work, we'll be able to change it back to the former schedule. Here's a longer article about the formerly mentioned blaze in downtown Westville. This dateline Westville, a long list of mostly volunteer fire departments successfully contained a major fire that threatened Westville's downtown business district to a single apartment building on Monday. Billowing smoke was visible at least several blocks away soon after the blaze started about 12:45 p.m. Monday, according to witnesses and emergency personnel, who descended on the scene from all over Vermilion County and even Champaign County to assist Westville with the blaze that started in a second-floor apartment at the back of a downtown building. Westville Fire Chief Gary White said a woman was the only person there at the time of the blaze, and she got out safely. People in businesses and other apartments in the downtown area were also evacuated. The fire shut down all lanes of Illinois 1 State Street in the city's downtown from Main Street to East William Street. Fire trucks and water trucks from more than a dozen departments filled State Street, including a Danville ladder truck called in to douse the blaze from above. Savoy also brought over a ladder truck to help fight the fire from above. Wright said that was very helpful because the fire had progressed so far they couldn't get inside the building to fight it. To ensure Westville didn't run out of water, Wright said departments with tankers were hauling it to the scene. One of those trucks from the Kickapoo Fire Protection District crashed en route to the scene. This is the picture we reported on earlier, colliding with a passenger vehicle at the intersection of Illinois 1 and Ross Lane. They also snarled traffic, shutting down the two southbound lanes of Illinois 1 and reducing the northbound traffic to one lane. Three people, including two firefighters in the tanker, were injured in that accident, but Wright said he thought all three suffered non-life-threatening injuries. Maple and Jan Ifont and Sharon Lotus Beauvoir were driving back into Westville from the grocery store in Tilton shortly after the blaze started. As they approached the downtown area on their way to Dollar General, Jean Lefant said they saw the smoke and huge flames coming from the apartment just behind the row of storefront buildings on the east side of State Street, and they pulled over near the State Farm Insurance Office as the first Westville fire truck arrived on the scene. We saw smoke billowing, Maple Lefant said. Jean Lefant said the smoke was blowing across State Street and flames were shooting into the air. Wright said it appears the fire was accidental and started in the bedroom of a second-floor apartment at the back of the downtown building that has businesses on the first floor, Top Club PC and Products. He didn't disclose exactly how the fire accidentally started. The front of the building is one of the storefronts on the east side of State Street in downtown Westville. LaRose Hardware and CMS Accounting and Tax Service are just to the north. The entire building, including the apartments and the part containing the computer business, is owned by Wayne Bryant of Westville. He said the apartment portion of the building is a total loss, but the rest of the building only suffered water damage. He said another building to the south suffered smoke damage. Tara Holler said her boyfriend, Dustin Holt of Clinton, Indiana, owned the business Top Club PC and Products. They were both at the scene of the fire, anxiously waiting to see what damage the contents suffered. Holler said Holt had been leasing the space since February of last year. She said he was not at the building at the time of the blaze and wasn't able to get inside to salvage anything. And that concludes the information about the major fire in downtown Westfield. I'm going to turn to now to the obituaries for today, February 13. The first one I see there is for Vendon, known as Bud Johnson. Vendon Bud Johnson, age 87, of Danville, passed away Saturday, February 11, 2018. Visitation will be at 10 a.m. noon, Thursday, February 15, at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East Williams, Danville, with service to follow at noon at Pape's with Pastor Wade Martin officiating. Messages and memories may be left at the website at www.papefuneral.com or the Pape Family Funeral Home Facebook page. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Bud's memory to the OSF Cancer Care Center, 806 North Logan, Danville, Illinois. The next obituary is for Mark Rouse. Mark Wayne Rouse, age 55, of Danville, passed away Wednesday, February 7, 2018, at OSF Healthcare in Urbana, Illinois, with his family by his side. Per wishes of Mark and the family will be having private services. Condolences may be sent to leakandsonsfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Michael Allen Guyman, age 69, of Danville, who passed away at home Friday, February 9, 2018, with his wife by his side. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m., Wednesday, February 14, at Trinity Lutheran Church, 824 East Main Street, Danville, with service to follow at 11 a.m. at the church with Pastor Kent Tibben officiating. Burial to follow at Lutheran Cemetery with military honors by American Legion Post 210. Messages and memories may be left on the website at www.papefuneral.com or at the Pape Funeral Family Funeral Home Facebook page. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Michael's name to Feed the Children Backpack Program through Rose Gates, Trinity Lutheran Church in Danville. Here's an obituary for Irma Emily Cade, age 98, of Cheneyville, who passed away at 9:11 p.m. Friday, February 9, 2018, at her home in Cheneyville. Memorials may be made in Irma's memory to the Hoopston Public Library, 110 North 4th Street, Hoopston, or to the donor's choice. Cremation rites will be accorded and a burial will be held at a later date. Please visit www.anderson-funeral-home.com to view Irma's tribute page and to send family condolences. The next obituary is for Nancy Irene Nee Jessup Bates, age 79, of Westville, who passed away at 8:05 a.m. Saturday, February 10, 2018, at Arbor Terrace Ortega in Jacksonville, Florida. A committal service will be held at a later date at Danville National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given in her name to Heartland Hospice, 8130 Bay Meadows Way, West 201, Jacksonville, Florida, 32256. You can share memories with her at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. And there is an obituary for Robert Galladay. Robert W. Galladay, Sr., age 86, of Westville, passed away at 8:15 a.m. Sunday, February 11, 2018, at VA Iliana Healthcare, Danville. A celebration of Robert's life will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February 16, at Sunset Urbis Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, February 15, at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Danville National Cemetery. Please join his family in sharing memories, photos, and videos of his life at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. And there is an obituary for Patrick Leo Tranchant, age 61, of Danville, who passed away at 4:24 p.m. Friday, February 9, 2018, at his home. Memorial services will be 10 a.m. Saturday, February 17, at Robeson Chapel, Catlin, Illinois, with Chaplain Chris Easton officiating. Burial in Jones Grove Cemetery, Catlin. There will be visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, February 16, at Robeson Chapel, Catlin, in lieu of flowers, memorials to the family. Online condolences may be sent to www.robesonchapel.com. And that concludes the obituaries for today, Tuesday, February 13. Returning to the news, we see a story here about a teen arrested after a high-speed chase. Police departments in Illinois and Indiana coordinated their efforts Saturday to stop a vehicle that had been reported stolen. According to Vermilion County, Indiana, Sheriff Mike Phelps, the Vermilion County, Illinois Sheriff's Department requested assistance about 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Saturday as its deputies pursued a vehicle on U.S. Route 36 east of Danville entering into Indiana. The Fountain County Sheriff's Office and Covington, Indiana Police took over the pursuit when the vehicle approached Indiana Route 63, according to police. The vehicle turned south on Route 63 and reached speeds of more than 120 miles per hour. Vermilion County, Indiana deputies took lead on the pursuit near County Road 400 North, said police, when the driver attempted to ram a police vehicle that was trying to slow the pursuit. The pursuit continued south on Route 63 at speeds of 110 miles per hour. Spike strips were deployed by a Park County, Indiana sheriff's deputy about a quarter mile north of Route 36. The vehicle attempted to avoid the spike strips but was unsuccessful. During the evasive maneuver to avoid the spike strips, police said the driver was unable to control the vehicle and entered the median. The vehicle continued across the northbound lanes and came to rest in the grass east of Route 63. The driver, whose name was not released, resisted arrest but was taken into custody and found to be a 15-year-old juvenile male from Danville, Illinois. He was transported to Union Hospital in Clinton, Indiana, treated for minor injuries, and released to juvenile detention authorities. The driver was placed in custody with Southwest Regional Youth Village, facing several felony and misdemeanor charges in Indiana and Illinois. Investigating officers were Vermilion County Deputies Chad Akers and Chad Hennis. Assisting officers were Reserve Deputy John Hawkins of Danville Police, the Vermilion County, Illinois Sheriff's Department, Fountain County Sheriff's Department, Covington, Indiana Police Departments, Cayuga, Indiana Town Marshals, and Park County, Indiana Sheriff's Department. It's quite a number of officers involved in that chase that ended on Saturday afternoon. Here's information about an upcoming banquet. The headline of this article is "A Collier to Speak at Annual Banquet." Dateline Danville. Allen Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church of Danville announces Terry Collier, who retired in 2014 from Clermonics International in Washington, D.C., will serve as the speaker of its 53rd annual Lincoln Douglas King Banquet. The banquet will begin at 6 p.m. Saturday at Day's Hotel, 77 North Gilbert Street. The ticket donation for the banquet is $30. Collier was born and raised in Danville, Illinois, the eldest son of the late Nathaniel and Mildred Collier. He attended Douglas School and is a graduate of Danville High School. He received his Master of Arts and Bachelor of Arts degrees in Spanish language and literature from the University of Illinois. From 1990 to 2014, Collier served as procurement advisor, director, agent for Chemonix International in Washington, D.C. His procurement expertise and thorough knowledge of USAID and World Bank regulations have taken him on short-term assignments to a number of countries, including Afghanistan, Bolivia, Bosnia, the Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Haiti, Indonesia, Kenya, Pakistan, Russia, and the West Bank. For more information about this banquet, which will be on Saturday, you can contact the banquet chairman, Dwight Adkins. His phone number is 217-260-1153. For ticket information, you're suggested to contact Virginia McKinney at 217-446-5639. Turning to the opinion page, we see an editorial here under Midwest Voices. This one was initially published in the State Journal Register in Springfield. And here's the column. Rauner's Valentine's Day gift to state could be a balanced budget proposal. It probably wouldn't make anyone's Valentine's Day wish list, but all Illinois residents could benefit if Governor Bruce Rauner remains true to his word. Wednesday is the day Rauner gives his annual budget address, and he has promised that the financial blueprint he lays out for the upcoming fiscal year will only spend what the state will receive in revenue. Only spend what you have. Sounds like it should be easy to accomplish, but therefore a gift easy to bestow upon the state's $12.8 million residents. But in Illinois, it's been years since there's been a truly balanced budget. For decades, elected officials of all political stripes have spent without concerning themselves with how much was in the state's coffers. That irresponsibility has left us dealing with the consequences of an unfunded pension obligation of at least $130 billion, a stack of unpaid bills that on Saturday sat at $8.6 billion, and the worst bond rating of any state in the nation. Rauner himself has not presented a truly balanced budget during his first 3 years in office. Rauner said at the time the gap would be made up through the Senate's grand bargain, a series of about a dozen bills, which included an appropriation bill proposed by Senate President John Cullerton and then Senate Majority Leader Christine Regdagno, with the hope of bipartisan compromise would break the gridlock that has crippled much of the state. Despite their considerable efforts, a grand bargain was never struck. To be considered balanced, a budget cannot rely on assumptions like the sale of a building or that changes will be made in pensions that will yield significant savings. The governor must look at what revenue the state is expected to take in and then present a proposal that spends only that money. Rauner is hardly the first one to propose a budget that does not do that. But he could be the one to set a new standard if he actually presents a plan that has the state live within its means. He told our editorial board last week the budget he intended to present Wednesday would be balanced, fiscally responsible, and lay out a path to roll back last year's income tax hike. He said there is still hundreds of millions of dollars in savings that could be rooted out. Concerns linger. On Wednesday, Rauner's administration said the deficit in the current budget had been cut to about $600 million from the $1.7 billion hole Rauner said it had when it was approved over his veto. On that same day, his administration asked lawmakers to approve a supplemental spending bill of $1.1 billion to cover unappropriated liabilities from the previous fiscal year. Like many residents, we just want fiscal stability in the state. It would be great to see the House, Senate, and Governor's administration work together. That now would be a gift worth cherishing. That concludes the editorial, and it concludes my reading of the Danville Commercial News for Tuesday, February 13. This is Don saying goodbye for now, and I look forward to reading with you again at some future time.